Whoever you are, wherever you have come from, whoever you love, we welcome you. My name is Joel Slater, and I am today's worship assistant, and I am joined today by Joanne Nussbaum, who is going to be our main speaker, and I might say ad hoc that she was also a member of this church for a number of years and led a discussion group for a while, so we're glad to see her back after so many years.
Today, our chalice lighting is inspired by the words of Unitarian Universalist minister Forrest Church: want what you have, do what you can, be who you are. I would like to share with you a very brief poem that I wrote about Mongolia while I was there, entitled simply Mongolia. Land of bluest blue skies, roughest terrain, harshest climate, proudest people, warmest hearts. With the Peace Corps.
And what is the Peace Corps?
Well, I was going to talk about that later, but I'll be happy to tell you that the Peace Corps is an organization of the U.S. government founded 50 years ago in 1961 by President John F. Kennedy, and it is to promote world peace and friendship.
And what work did you do when you were in Mongolia?
I did lots of fun and interesting things. I worked as a community youth development specialist, which basically means I played with kids a lot, which was great fun. And we did after-school clubs and activities, and I also taught English as a second language.
What was the hardest part about living so far away in Mongolia?
One of the hardest parts was the food, because I love food. I love to cook it. I love to buy it. I love to eat it. But in Mongolia, the food was not to my taste.
And what was the most wonderful part about living and working in Mongolia?
Several things, but mostly I would have to say the people and the friends I made and the children I worked with. They were just awesome.
What did you learn about yourself while you were there, Joanne?
This is something else I was going to mention later. I learned quite a few things about myself, and as we all know, we continue to learn all the time. I learned that I want to travel more. I learned that people all over the world are very similar. And that about covers it.
And what will you miss most about your time in Mongolia?
Aside from the children and the friends I made, I will miss the wide open spaces. I could go anywhere in the countryside, and you could see literally for miles, and you would not see a person, sometimes not even an animal, anything. It was beautiful, and the sky is amazing.
We're wondering if any of you have questions for Joanne. Any children in particular, or adults? Logan?
Is Mongolia kind of like China?
Logan wonders if Mongolia is kind of like China.
Well, Logan, it is not like China, but it is bordered by China. And actually, the Chinese people and the Mongolian people have a long, not so happy history.
The question is, how long does it take to get mail in Mongolia?
I'm thinking you mean snail mail, because fortunately I had email and Skype, which is wonderful. But for me, I usually got things in about a month, but in particular, I had a really cute Christmas card from my niece Leah and her husband Tony that she sent at least a month before Christmas, and I got it 7 months later. So it all depends.
Okay. Joel has a question.
I'm curious about the food that you didn't like.
Oh, Well, I'll keep that brief, and it is fatty, old, terrible mutton is the main food that they eat, fat and flour. They do make some good noodles and things with flour, but the main diet is what it was hundreds of years ago as nomads and herders. It's usually mutton and whatever they could make with flour. The two main dishes are hosher, which is a deep-fried mutton sandwich, and boats, which are steamed mutton dumplings. I obviously found food I could eat and like, though. So I didn't suffer horribly.
Well, thank you, Joanne. That was really informative and fun, too.
And now I would like to share with you some words of wisdom from Helen Keller. The best and most beautiful things in life cannot be seen or heard, but must be felt with the heart.
When all the people of the world love, then the strong will not overpower the weak. The many will not oppress the few. The wealthy will not mock the poor. The honored will not disdain the humble. The cunning will not deceive the simple.
Woodrow Wilson said, "You are here to enable the world to live more amply, with greater vision and with a finer spirit of hope and achievement. You are here to enrich the world." Woodrow Wilson was such a wise man. I think his words bear repeating. You are here to enable the world to live more amply, with greater vision and a finer spirit of hope and achievement. You are here to enrich the world. Hello, I see so many friends and people that I know here. I'm very happy to be here today to share a little with you about my experience in the Peace Corps and in Mongolia. The title, I just had a difficult time coming up with something really snappy that would grab your attention. So I never thought of volunteering overseas or that one person could do much to change the world or their environment. Sure, I tried to live by the golden rule, to be helpful, to leave things better than I had found them, but I was really stuck in my own little world. Job, an apartment, family, friends. I had tunnel vision. Then my daughter died. Life as I knew it imploded. And after the initial shock, I did a lot of reflection, reevaluating, grief counseling, and then I had a post-traumatic aha moment. My life was not really what I had hoped for, not really how I ever thought it would turn out to be, and I was kind of unsatisfied. I did quite a spiritual journey with some people here at the Kent Unitarian Universalist Church, and I took my life situation as an opportunity for change and growth, and to move forward and do something more that I wanted to do, that I thought would be meaningful, not only to myself, but I am self-centered, so I wanted to be happy and I wanted to enjoy what I was doing, but I also wanted to share with others. My daughter gave me a gift. She showed me how much one person can affect others, how one person can touch so many lives, and how each act of kindness, friendship, and love has a positive effect on others, and just how much one loving heart can inspire others. Love has a trickle-down effect. I aspire to be as good a person as my daughter, Victoria Marie Hunt, who died October 1st, 2006. Many of you know me as the person who sat in this church and made that statement. many times. And then my Unitarian Universalist friend, Linda, who is here today, suggested the Peace Corps to me. And I thought, the Peace Corps? What? And I checked into it, and before long, I was in the application process. Volunteering for me was an opportunity to share my time and talents. It also opened my heart and mind quite a bit and helped me find a place in the world as a citizen of the world. Developing countries usually lack infrastructure, also known as third world countries, infrastructure, roads. If they have roads, they're very bad roads, lack of plumbing, lack of electricity, and lack of fresh, clean water. In Mongolia, definitely a developing country, there are not many roads. There are, I was fortunate to live where the paved road went, but the paved road is not so glorious. And I was looking up some statistics to try and give some accurate information, but there's a wide variety of stats out there. So in Mongolia, somewhere a minimum of 20% people live in poverty, up to, depending where you check, 40%. I kind of think it's somewhere at least 30%. Developing countries are also behind what we would consider our safety standards. If you think of a generation ago when maybe when some of us were growing up, we didn't have seat belts when we were babies, no car seats. That's exactly how it is in Mongolia. It's common to see a new mother holding an infant in the front seat of the car, no restraints of any sort. And it was very uncommon to ever use seat belts. We would cram many people into the back of a vehicle. Also, smoking cigarettes. That's also at least a generation behind. Everybody smokes. Cigarettes are cheap. And as a reform smoker, I am happy to say that I was not tempted to take up smoking again. Yeah. And also, alcohol is a big issue for the country of Mongolia. The best stat I found is that 24% of men in Mongolia are alcoholic. And I think a lot of it comes, it depends what you believe and what you ascribe to, but I tend to believe that there are genetic predispositions to such a thing, and you know, certain ethnic groups of people have higher rates of alcoholism, and I think that that Mongolians do as well. Also, the way that they drink probably has something to do with that. People tend to involve vodka in most celebrations, and when they drink vodka, whether it's three people or 10 people, you open a bottle of vodka, you pour, the first person has to down the shot, and it goes round and round until it's all gone. So it used to be, before the communist era, people made their own vodka, which had a much lower alcohol percentage. And now most of the vodka consumed in Mongolia is from Russia. Well, some of it was. Some is still, it's made in Mongolia as well, but 40% alcohol. Also, in developing countries, and especially in Mongolia, because they were ruled by the Soviets for so long, a lot of people kind of have that Soviet work ethic where you had the job no matter what. You didn't have to strive for good job performance. And so there seems to be a tendency of unreliability in employees and kind of a lack of effort. That is changing somewhat with democracy and capitalism. There are many people who have businesses who really have to work hard to keep those up. Another thing about Mongolia in particular, a lot of the, I found a current statistic which says 30% of the people are nomadic. And that is actually the Mongolian heritage, is to be herders and to make their living roving around the country, feeding their animals, changing, moving their gear, which is like also called a yurt in Western circles, but they would fold it up and move it to new grazing places. But in recent years, there have been many dzuds, and a dzud is an extremely harsh winter, which is followed, first there's a dry summer, followed by a very harsh winter. Minimal precipitation in both, but there is a layer of permafrost under most of the entire country of Mongolia that just does not thaw, and so animals who are grazing are unable to feed, so animals starve and freeze to death. That has caused many herders to go broke, lose their way of life, in addition to their jobs. So at this point, there are some institutions and charitable organizations that assist herders to rebuild their herds and maintain their lifestyle, but many of them have just given up and moved to the capital city, Ulaanbaatar, which more than half of the population of the entire country lives in this city, which is dirty, cramped, and it's a big place. People who move there, who were herders, move to the outskirts of town and set up gear districts where there are just, everyone has their little fenced-in yard, and they have their gear there, and there is not running water. There is electricity, but no running water. People have to go to the local well, many times taking a cart or just carrying jugs so they can go and buy water for their daily use. Mongolia is a homogeneous society. There is really no diversity to speak of unless you're in the capital city, and then there is a large expat community. There are lots of people from many countries who live and work there because it is, as an English speaker, you can make a decent living. There are also many mining companies now that have kind of taken over and barged in on Mongolia. The most recent stat I found, the population is about 2.75 million, and Mongolia is the most sparsely populated country in the world. So when I talk about the big sky and going out in the countryside and not seeing anything or anyone, that's exactly how it is. And there is little arable land. It is mostly desert, steppe, which is like prairie, but without really anything growing on it, and some mountains. Mongolians pride themselves on their unspoiled nature, and it is actually a big tourist destination for many parts of Europe and other parts of Asia. People come and take trips, they'll go camping, they will get a guide and a driver, and you need a driver in a place that doesn't have many roads. And my sister can attest to this. She came to visit, and we went from my little town to another little town to go to the Nodum Festival there. And some friends drove us in their old Russian Jeep, and it was a bumpy ride because there's really no road. It's just like little paths, and sometimes you're just driving in what looks like a field. You have to zigzag around rocks or rivers. So ecotourism is a pretty big business there, where people will pay a lot to come and just be out in the wild. And also in Mongolia, you can actually just pitch a tent anywhere and camp. So that's a nice thing. But Mongolians have deep traditions in music, folk tales. I went on a trip with some teachers from my school. Actually, there were 70 Mongolians and me. And we went on a, what turned out to be, it was 8 or 9 days. Some days it felt like weeks, but we were in meekers, which are like minivans, and we drove from where I lived many, many hundreds of kilometers north to where there was actually a lake and a forested area to see the beautiful Lake Hovsgol. But we would be driving along, and people, of course, were passing the vodka around, and someone would start singing a Mongolian song, and everyone knows the words to every Mongolian song ever sung. Children, adults, anyone, anywhere, sometimes will just start singing and everyone else knows the song. So that is a very rich heritage that I think is pretty cool, that I can't relate anything to that. I talked a little about, I briefly mentioned mining as becoming a big booming business in Mongolia. They are finding gold, copper, and coal, and many foreign countries have got their hand in there, and I'm just a little concerned for the welfare of the country. Currently, the government of Mongolia is sharing the profits with every citizen by giving them a chunk of money on a regular basis, and a lot of people disagree with that. I also wanted to mention that there is something called ninja mining, which is basically anyone and their brother, and many times it's their entire family, goes to a valley where they know that gold or copper has been found, and they basically dig a tunnel. You've probably read or seen something about this. There was a BBC special. There have been articles in many magazines and such, but they will dig a tunnel which is barely big enough for one person to fit into and try and find some minerals so they can make some money. And it becomes extremely dangerous because one little area will have people just digging very close to each other, so there's a lot of danger of collapse of their little shafts and such. Children in Mongolia really are much different than kids here. And I'm speaking in generalities, of course, that many kids here, I think, have so much materially and opportunity-wise as well. In Mongolia, children and their parents really value education, and that sounds kind of like the stereotype, but people really do value a good education, and kids who grow up in the traditional lifestyle of living in a ger don't have much space. They really have no privacy. A ger is just one big room, with beds along the sides, and they don't have many possessions or toys, and they have a lot more responsibility than most children that I have seen their same age, whether it's taking care of younger siblings, doing laundry, cooking. A couple of times in classes for high school students, I would ask, just do a little survey, how many... So let me ask you. Let's say you're 15. At 15, could you hand wash your clothes? Okay. Maybe it's not going to work with this crowd. But in Mongolia, kids usually hand wash their laundry mostly. I was very fortunate to have a washing machine, which is not a washer by any means, but it's a little thing that actually does wash. So I didn't have to do that. But kids would wash clothes. They would be in charge of cleaning the gear, of making dinner, just many different things. In Mongolia, the main religion is Buddhism, and it's Tibetan Buddhism. And I would actually say it's a combination of Tibetan Buddhism and shamanism, kind of all rolled into one. There were many times that I tried to actually go see a shaman, and it never panned out. But back in the 30s, the Russians destroyed many of the Buddhist temples, and most of them have been rebuilt. And there has been a resurgence in Buddhism in the last 20 years since Mongolia became independent. And there was a Buddhist temple in my community that I got to know one of the monks there who speaks really good English because he learned it in India. And so he has a little Indian lilt to his English. But I assisted Batur in teaching English classes, which they offer free to the community, in addition to classes on Buddhism, which I wanted to take, but they were only in Mongolian, so I probably would catch one word out of an hour. And some interesting things that I found about Buddhism was that people pray for good grades or to lose weight, just things that I thought were kind of funny. And there are also quite a few similarities between Mongolians and Native Americans. Mongolians believe that no one owns the land, even though in Mongolia, as an adult citizen, you are entitled to a piece of land. And if you live in a town, you they kind of annex one area at a time. So if you don't already have a hasha, which is what your yard is called, then you are eligible to be given that land, even though, like I say, they don't believe that you own the land, but it is where you can put your home. And Mongolians also do a lot in the way of nature worship. On the trip I mentioned to the lake, we hiked. They said, we're going to go to a cave to the lake to pray. So I said, great. So it wasn't a cave. We climbed out on a little cliff overlooking the lake. And there was a little shrine there. And they said later that, you know, you ask for something that you want, and this is where the losing weight, a couple of my teacher friends said, I asked to lose my weight. So I just thought that was funny. But they said, you know, we also pay our respects to the lake. And most Mongolians, I'll give you an example here. Even very highly educated people, one of the teachers I worked with who has a master's in education, who has spoken English for years and years, who has traveled, who is pretty worldly, honestly believed that her husband drowned, he died, 3 years ago, and she believes that he drowned because another teacher cursed her family. So, as educated and as worldly as she is, there are still some superstitions that persist. The Peace Corps, I wanted to touch on briefly, which I already did, was 50 years old. just this last year, founded by President John F. Kennedy in 1961, and there are three main goals, and I am promoting the third goal right now by helping to promote a better understanding of Mongolia to you as Americans. Another goal is for, when I was there, to help Mongolians understand Americans a little more and hopefully give them a good view of Americans. And Peace Corps only goes to countries, usually developing countries, that ask for assistance. So it's providing, helping people of interested countries in meeting their need for trained men and women. In Mongolia, I was welcomed, appreciated, and loved by the kids. By getting out of my comfort zone, I realized that I can learn something new, live somewhere I've never dreamed of, and let the universe take me where it will. People, though they may look different, speak a language foreign to us, and live across the world, have common similarities. People are all good and kind, want the best for their loved ones, and we are all connected.
Reminded that we are part and participants of the universe, let us go forth from the quiet of this hour, encouraged to strive toward faithfulness to the best in ourselves, in others, and in all creation.